You're listening to a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, dedicated to bringing podcasters together for the greater good of gaming. It's sort of like Voltron, but with better lip syncing. Find out more at dicetowernetwork.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode 176.
Would you like to know something interesting about 176?
Sure.
This is actually really cool. Are you ready for this? The number 176 in mathematics is a cake number, and it is also...
What on earth does that mean?
It is also a happy number.
What does that mean?
A cake number is the maximum number of regions into which a three-dimensional cube can be partitioned by exactly n planes.
I don't even know what that means.
The cake number is so called because one may imagine each partition of the cube by a plane as a slice made by a knife through a cube-shaped cake.
Okay, sure. And why is it a happy number?
Well, a happy number is different from a cake number. A happy number is a natural number in a given number base that eventually reaches 1 when iterated over the perfect digital invariant function for p equals 2. Obviously.
Oh my goodness. Making my brain hurt.
Hello, everybody. We are the Family Gamers. As always, I am your host, Andrew, and I am joined by my lovely and wonderful wife, Anitra.
That's me.
And this week, we'd like to remind you that we are very thankful to be sponsored by First Move Financial. First Move Financial is a financial services firm started by Donnie Carpenter, and his focus is to help normal families...
like yours and ours.
Mm-hmm. Work with their finances. This isn't just investing. It can include investing, but also spending every dollar wisely, knowing when to transition from debt payments to making other important purchases that you might have to make in your life, but mostly intelligently navigating the money world. Donnie Carpenter is a board gamer just like us, so he completely understands the shelf of shame. You can head to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers to find out more. So, everyone, this is our looking forward to 2020 and also a slight retrospective on 2019 podcast.
Yeah, we could call that.
So we're going to take a look at what we thought our board gaming related 2019 New Year's resolutions would be, whether or not we accomplished them, and what we're going to try to do for 2020.
All right, sounds good.
All right. But as always, before we get into that, why don't we talk about what we've been playing?
Yeah, let's do that. You and I learned how to play Koi from Smirk and Dagger Games. This is gorgeous and also reminds you that goldfish are mean.
Yes, goldfish are jerks. So this is a game where you are playing as a koi in a koi pond and you are swimming around trying to eat dragonflies and frogs.
Yeah, but the thing is that you can affect where new dragonflies and frogs and obstacles are placed and sometimes even move them around a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Or... you can use your movement to bump into other fish and then turn them away from the path they had planned on. It's kind of great.
It is remarkably laid back for such an evil game.
Yeah, I mean, it's got that kind of calm zen feeling, but with the occasional little, like, I'm going to just shift you slightly. Oh, by the way, and stab you in the back.
It's the most relaxing kidney shiv you've ever had. So this is a game that... if you have family members that really don't deal with, it's not quite Take That, but like very clearly offensive play, this is just something to be aware of.
Yeah.
I mean, you can play it nicely.
You can, but generally if one player starts playing mean while everybody else is playing nice, that player is going to have a pretty serious advantage.
Yes, absolutely. I totally agree with you. There's also a little bit of luck in the game because you're pulling cards and those cards give you the ability to do certain things. Like move or play certain objects. If you get bad cards, it's really difficult. They kind of mitigated this by allowing you to discard n number of cards and draw n minus one number of cards. But that feels to me like a Band-Aid kind of solution.
But sometimes that works well and sometimes it doesn't. Mm-hmm. So for the most part, it's good. But it is possible to end up in a situation where you just feel like you have no good moves.
Right.
But hopefully that doesn't last very long.
Right. And... I suspect as we play this game a little bit more before we get ready to actually do a formal review and not just talk about it on the podcast, I imagine we're going to find some strategies around some of those things.
I hope so.
So that remains to be seen. That was on Sunday. On Monday, I hosted our Common Heart game night. We were super busy, so I played exactly one game. I showed a bunch of people how to play a bunch of games.
Sure.
But the only thing I had to play was Dungeon Academy.
Oh, it's so good.
It really is. So for New Year's, we pulled out Dungeon Academy and played it a bit with our friends, and they made the recommendation that instead of dry erase markers, we should use wet erase markers. Now, I guess, I mean, I knew that wet erase markers existed, but like, if you're planning on using markers and erasing them, dry erase is kind of the go-to thing. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you, everybody out there, wet erase is thebomb.com.
Yeah, because your hands won't smudge it as you accidentally run over it.
Yeah, it's instantly, air quote, permanent.
Yeah, but then it, generally speaking, will wipe off with just water.
Yep, it's great. Yeah. So, Dungeon Academy, still a great game, still enjoying it very much. Then, we went on a date. Little lunch date,
mm-hmm. And we pulled out this tiny little game from Letterman Games called Squire for Hire.
So this is not a button-shy title, but it totally felt like a button-shy title.
It kind of really did. I think it was more than 18 cards, but not by much.
Mm-hmm. So this is a game where you are a squire, and you are trying to complete some quests, and you are using items in your backpack to complete the quest. And your backpack are cards that have a 4x6 maybe grid on it with some items in it. And so when you complete a quest, you get to take another item card and overlay part of your backpack.
Yeah, it basically is an inventory management game,
mm-hmm.
but all done with cards. So you're overlaying the cards on each other to increase the space in your backpack. But there are good items and there are also junk items. And at the end of the game, which is when there are no more quest type things to do, you literally just add up all the points in your bag with a couple of modifiers based on your squire. And all of the junk items are worth -1 point each. So you want to cover as many of them as possible while also leaving some open space to put new items in and also not covering your valuable items unless you're required to with the rules of a particular quest.
Mm. It was a nice, short, compact game, maybe 10 to 15 minutes to play through the entire game with the two of us. And we got to have lunch and have a little date at the same time.
Yeah, and it's real cute, and it plays either solo or two-player,
mm-hmm.
and it's about the same either way. I played it solo later, and I was really surprised that playing it solo, I did not score much higher than I did in playing the two-player game, because I was like, well, I'm going to get to see twice as many cards. Of course I'll score better. There were way more quests that I just couldn't do, and so those ended up getting discarded, and I never got to get any benefit from them.
As you are building your backpack, you kind of have to choose some specializations, whether you're going magic or armor or weapons. And so, as a consequence, a bunch of stuff you can't do, right? Like, that's how it works
out.
Okay. That makes sense. I got a chance to play Wednesday evening. You were busy. I got a chance to play Animal Kingdoms. So, this is a game from Galactic Raptor Studios.
Mm-hmm.
Galactic Raptor is one half Carla Kopp, who is Weird Giraffe.
Mm-hmm.
And we picked this one up at PAX Unplugged. This is a game, it's really interesting. It's this kind of set management game. It's not really set collection. But what you're doing is you have a hand of cards and you're playing cards into one of these five different kingdoms. Each kingdom has a placement restriction. So those restrictions might be something like it has to be the same beast or rank as the last card played in one of the kingdoms to the left or right of it.
Okay.
Right? Or it has to be +1 or -1 rank from the last card that was played in this kingdom. Mm. Or it has to be a 4 or 5, or it has to be a 1 or a 2 or a 3. These are the placement restrictions, and so as you're placing cards, you're placing like influence tokens into these sections of the pentagon. And over the course of the game, you gain points depending on who has the most influence in those various kingdoms. There's 3 rounds in the game. It's really nice. It's a nice game. It took us a couple of rounds to kind of feel the strategy of it out.
Mm-hmm.
We played 2-player. The art is nice. I think I said this to you earlier. 3 or 4 years ago, I would have given this art like a 9 or a 10. It's beautiful art.
Mm-hmm.
But board games in general have raised the bar for art. So it's nice art. It's good.
Like a 7 or an 8.
Yeah. Okay. It's good, but
it doesn't make you go, wow, anymore.
Exactly. Board game, like, and that was really an interesting reflection point for me to think about games like Brass or Everdell that are just so gorgeous.
Sure.
And to just really be impressed with where board games have come over the last couple of years. But that was Animal Kingdom by Galactic Raptor. It was a lot of fun. I really did enjoy it. I think you're going to like it a lot. And I also think that our kids are going
to
like it.
Okay.
Because
I'm
it's not set collection, but it's kind of set building.
Okay.
I guess. I don't really know how to explain it. But it was nice.
Thursday, you and I learned another game together. We learned Miyabi.
Over lunch.
Which we had talked about when we saw the HABA booth at PAX Unplugged.
Yes.
And it is just as puzzly as T promised us it would be.
Yep. So this is a game by Michael Kiesling. It's way more puzzly than it appears at first blush. You're drafting tiles from a common tile selection. You're placing them on your boards, but you can only place one tile per column.
And whatever the special thing on the tile is has to go in the specific row that matches that item. So whether it's rocks or it's maple trees or it's koi ponds or whatever.
Yeah. Right, exactly. So it ends up being super puzzly, and then you score points, and the higher up your tile is on your stack of tiles, there's point multipliers for those. So you really end up puzzling your way through this. You demolished me, and I knew halfway through the game that I had made some horrible decisions.
I am really looking forward to playing it again, not so much because I did so particularly well, but halfway through the game I started seeing like, oh, well, this is how you could do it better. This is how you can set yourself up better
and
make decisions differently.
I had a really hard time not covering the entire board. Like, I was doing the puzzle thing,
right
where you're trying to fit the pieces, but that's totally not how you win this game.
No, the way you win this game is to make enough of a platform that you can keep building upwards.
Right.
Much like Number 9, which I think we first talked about 3 years ago, maybe?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was Miyabi from HABA. I remember talking to T, I don't think this is going to be in stock for like another month or two. So it's something to keep your eyes out for. Maybe you could pick it up used right now. It's a great game that's very approachable.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's available at this point. I think they've pretty much sold out.
And then we had some friends over Friday night. We were hoping to play one or two games that we're working on reviewing, and we ended up playing a whole bunch.
Yeah, we gamed our faces off and played 5 games.
So we played Ecos, The First Continent.
Mm-hmm, from AEG.
Which we had first seen, again, at PAX Unplugged. I really, really like this game. It is a fairly complex game, but everything holds together and makes sense and fits. It's an engine building game, and I was terrible at it, but I really enjoyed it, and I didn't feel like I didn't understand what was going on.
Yeah, the thing about this game that's really cool is that the engine is super obvious. I don't even know how to kind of explain it, but sometimes with engine builders, you really need to feel like you get the mechanics of the game before you can make an effective engine.
I could not make an effective engine, so...
Well, I just felt like they did a better job of not requiring you to understand the mechanics at this, like, weird, crazy metagame level, like your Neo in the Matrix kind of thing. You can just kind of look at your card and say, oh, if I do this, I can do that.
If I do this, I can do that. Sure.
And because you're allowed to reuse cards, even though eventually they are expendable, it became a little bit easier, I thought, to put the engine together-ish. Now, obviously, the guy who wiped the floor with us, he got it better than we did.
Yes, right away.
And there's a little bit of luck in the tile pulling, but it's not that bad.
No, I mean, this is a game that gives you lots of opportunities for different strategies, which is great. And there are many different strategies that can work well, which I think is really cool in a more complex game, especially when you can keep it intuitive and not need tons of text everywhere. I mean, literally outside of the rule book, the only text in Ecos is on the cards. And even then, the text on the cards is things like draw a card or take a card or take a cube.
For the most part,
there's a few cards that have more, like I had a cheetah card that came up and had a lot of explanation about what you could do with the cheetahs and how they would move and then what would happen. But most of the cards were pretty text light.
Yeah, it is text light. I would still say I don't think I would play this game with a pre-reader.
Oh no, there's way more procedural knowledge and being able to understand this follows that that comes with being a fluent reader.
Yeah, that I agree with.
I might play it with someone who doesn't read English well, though.
Okay. I mean, there's strong iconography in the game.
Yeah.
I agree with you 100% on that.
Yeah.
And I do want to say this. So much of this game shows extreme attention to detail.
Oh, yeah.
So this is primarily, at its core, a tile-laying game, right?
Yeah.
The tiles are different things. Sometimes they're trees, but whatever.
Yeah.
The ocean tiles are thinner than the land tiles to indicate that ocean is lower.
It's going to be a little bit lower.
In the box, there are containers that you build to hold all of the tokens. So they just come right out of the box.
All the animal tokens.
All the animal tokens and all the cubes.
Yeah.
The way the wooden mountain pieces are made, you can put trees on them, which I just think is a really cool extra three-dimensional effect. There's some really neat stuff with the way that various creatures, like the antelopes, for example, will tend to flock together and move, which is something that not a lot of other ones do. Hippos typically will score better if they have access to both land and sea.
If they have grasslands and water.
Yeah, there's just so much that you can look at and say, like, they really worked this through. They even built in a mechanism where if you're not getting the tiles that you want, there's this other thing that you can do to kind of bide your time that isn't, like, a wasted action. It is actually helpful.
Yes, if you're not getting the resources you want, there are still things you can do, which is awesome.
They have done such an excellent job with a lot of the mechanisms in this game, and it's nice to look at. It's really, really well put together. I have some minor quibbles, but
I think we're
going to
play it more. We're going to play it with our kids for sure.
Our two older kids.
Well, yeah, definitely not Elliot, but we'll play with the older two. And I envision this game getting a fairly good rating when we finally get around to reviewing it. But I think it's going to take a while because there's a lot of depth there.
There's a ton of depth to it.
So that's Ecos, the First Continent from AEG. We also played The Grim Masquerade.
We did. And you know what's funny?
We have not been shy about how much we like this game.
That's true. I had never played it with special powers before.
Yeah, the special powers were super neat and not nearly as intimidating as I thought they might be.
Right. So essentially, here's how the special powers work. Basically, if you have the lowest number of roses at the end of a round, whoever your character was, you get that character's special power for the next round. That's it. Sometimes these powers are better than other powers or things like that, but it's absolutely a catch-up mechanic, and I think it makes a ton of sense.
Yeah, I really liked it, and I think it's a great way to keep it a little bit more fresh, and as we play the Grim Masquerade more and more, I think we're going to use the special powers more often.
I think so.
So we also played one of our old, longtime favorites, which is Duple.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It had been a long time since we had pulled this out to play. So long, I did not have it in my board game play tracking
app. Which you've had for,
which I've had
at this
for
point,
a little
almost,
over 2 years.
Yeah, that's crazy. Wow, it's really been that long.
Apparently.
I've played it more recently because I brought it to Common Heart Game Night.
Sure.
But I guess you have not. Okay. Then we did an unlock box. This was Unlock a No Side Story. I highly recommend this for kids.
This one, it was really good.
It was really good. We were like firing on all cylinders when we first started. We were ripping through this thing. And then we hit one or two puzzles that were kind of rough. But this is a great one for kids. It's a one lock difficulty. It's very cartoony.
Both in difficulty and in content, very appropriate for kids.
Yes.
It's all about going into this mad scientist laboratory full of robots. And a lot of the puzzles are based around the robots.
Mm.
But not all of them.
So it does take a little bit of cleverness.
Oh, sure.
It just does, because it's an unlock box. I also loved, and I don't think this is a spoiler, that when you start the app for this game, you get a phone call, air quote, which kind of starts the mission off for you. And I thought that was kind of a cool way to do it. So that was Unlock a No Side Story. Finally, we rounded out the night with another Hobba game.
Yeah, we wanted something just quick and easy and not using too much brain power for the end of the night.
So we played Boom Bang Gold.
It was great.
This game is funny. I think this game's going to come to Common Heart Game Night, too.
I definitely think it should, although be aware of tokens flying off the table. So in Boom Bang Gold, the box itself has a false bottom. You dump all these stone-looking tokens in, and then on the count of three, everybody throws these little wooden sticks of dynamite into the box to make the tokens jump, and some of them will flip over, and then everybody is reaching in simultaneously with one hand, very important, only with one hand, and pulling out gold and little tokens that have special powers on them. And that's the majority of the game right there.
It's very silly.
They make it more fun by having some special powers that let you do things like, oh, I'm the sheriff and all of your fake gold, illegal gold, has to go back in the mine. You know, or you can pull one that lets you duel another player and possibly steal some of their gold.
Yeah. It's a silly game.
It's silly and fun, and there's not much skill involved, but there's some. And it is just the definition of a fun family game.
Absolutely. We had a lot of fun with that one as well.
All right, one last one. On our usual Saturday morning date time, me and Asher, I told him he could pick any board game he wanted, and he decided to learn Mega City Oceania. And we had a great time, and he built a crazy tall landmark building right near the end of the game and lost by 1 point. But we both had a great time with it. We're still in the learning stage, so we're playing sort of a modified version that doesn't use absolutely all of the features of the game yet. But it's still super cool, and I really like building the buildings and gently pushing them into place and hoping they don't fall over as you push them into place and not really caring if they fall over later.
Right. All right, and that's everything that we have been playing. We've got a ton of pretty amusing stuff to take a look at in the second half of the show, talking about what we did or did not do for 2019.
We'll see.
Yeah. So coming up is a snap review for possibly our favorite game in recent memory.
Possibly.
Possibly. And after that, let's talk retrospective. Hey, Anitra.
Hey, Andrew.
I would like to give you a clue about a game.
I'm listening.
This is a game that is like Codenames. But it's also like 20 questions.
I know what game it is. It's Similo.
It is.
This is a snap review for Similo Fables and Similo History.
The Similo series is published by Horrible Guild and Luma Imports.
Both of these are cooperative card games, and they're suitable for a wide range of ages and player counts.
In Similo, everyone is trying to guess a secret character that one clue giver is trying to share information about.
All of the players are working together, but the clue giver is not allowed to say anything. They are only allowed to give clues in the way they place cards.
Similo is made up of a deck of beautifully illustrated cards, whether it's the fantasy cards in Fables or historical characters in Similo History. To start the game, deal 12 cards face up in a grid, and the clue giver will secretly select one of those to be the secret character for the round.
The clue giver gets 5 cards into their hand. They pick one and lay it on the table. They can orient it the same way as the other cards, we call this vertically, if it has something similar to the secret character. Or they turn it 90 degrees, we call this horizontally, if it is in some way different from their secret character.
Once the clue giver has done this, all of the other players discuss amongst themselves and try to figure out what could be similar or different about the card played by the clue giver and the cards on the table. In the first round, they turn over one of the 12 cards to indicate that they do not believe that card is the secret character.
Then the clue giver draws a new card and gives a second clue. After this, the guessers work together to eliminate 2 cards from the grid.
The clue giver draws a card again and delivers a third clue, forcing the guessers to flip over 3 cards.
And again, 4 cards with the fourth clue. If the players have gotten this far, there are only 2 face-up cards remaining. One of these is the secret character, the other one is not.
The clue giver gives one final clue, and the guessers try to choose which one is the secret character. If they are correct, everybody wins.
That's it. That's the whole game.
So Anitra, what do we think about Similo?
We found Similo incredibly easy to explain, as we've just explained it to you, and very quick to play. Games take about 10 minutes.
I completely agree. We love games that can fit into a purse or into a pocket. Similo is just a deck of cards. They're beautifully illustrated, very clear. We chose Codenames and 20 Questions at the beginning on purpose, because Similo feels like a combination of those two games.
Yeah, it's simpler than Codenames, and it's fully cooperative, like 20 Questions can be. Similo has the simplicity of a party game, including the ability for players to drop in or drop out as needed. But unlike Codenames or some other games of that nature, it plays just as well at 2 players, one clue giver, one guesser.
We found sometimes with higher player counts, if not everybody's on the same page, it can get a little bit unwieldy, but truly the game can flex very well up or down.
Yeah, as long as you're okay with playing by committee, this is a great game. Don't forget, the clue giver should not be talking. The card they play is all the information they can communicate. However, the rest of the team, all of the guessers, can freely talk amongst themselves. Listening to this may help the clue giver to tailor their following clues.
Because remember, this is a fully cooperative game. Everybody is working together, including the clue giver. So with regards to our kids, we found Fables works a little bit better. They're more familiar with the characters. The history deck is a fair bit harder. Even I don't know who some of these people are, although I'm learning as I play.
If you want a real challenge, you can combine both decks together or give clues to the Fable deck with history cards or vice versa.
But no matter which game you're playing, every card does have some identifying information on the right side of them in small text. It can be very helpful sometimes when you're interpreting clues. And like I mentioned, it can be a little bit educational.
You can learn something. All of the cards, both the fables and the history cards, will give the appropriate time frame, dates and years. And the history cards will give you a little one-sentence summary of why a person is important.
Similo fables, similo history, these games are inexpensive. They're published, like we said, by Horrible Guild and Luma Imports. You can find them on Amazon for about $10 each. They are well worth the price. It's an easier game to get into than a game like Codenames, and everybody at the table can enjoy it.
So, Andrew, what would we rate the Similo games?
For what they are, they do a fantastic job. Honestly, I can't find that much wrong with these. I think we're going to rate Similo 5 clues out of 5.
And that's Similo in a snap. And we're back.
We are back from our break, so we're going to talk retrospective, 2019 retrospective. Did we actually successfully accomplish our goals for 2019?
Depends on the goals.
It does. What are our goals for 2020?
We have goals.
Does our success or failure from 2019 affect our expectations for 2020?
Yes.
That's a definite yes. We're going to talk about all of that, I think. So we went back and we listened to our show from last year.
Yeah, it's episode 126, if you're curious.
Let's give that a listen. Anyway, so yeah, so 5x5, that's number one. Number two is we have a 5x5 Kallax. In that 5x5, we have 2 cubes full of basically Shelf of Shame games.
And 2 more cubes full of games we need to review.
And 2 cubes full of review games, plus to the games that are in the overflow.
Yeah.
And we also have some games on top of the Kallax. My base level goal is to get everything in the freaking Kallax.
That's the base level goal? You're crazy.
My higher level goal is to shrink both the Shelf of Shame and the review cubes from 2 to 1. I mentioned earlier I'm working on a game. I'd like to have a workable prototype at the end of the year. I've got a bag of components over there. Right. I'd like to turn that into something a little bit more meaningful than just a bag of components. So one of the things that was on my list was to complete a 5x5. This is 5 different games, each one of which being played at least 5 times.
And how'd that go for you, Andrew?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, you upgraded it to a 10x10.
I did, and that was stupid.
You do nothing by halves.
And that was dumb. If I took 5 of the games out of my 10x10... the ones I played the most, I still don't think I played any of those 5 times. Now, there are at least 5 games that I played at least 5 times. They are not the ones that I identified at the beginning of the year that would be on my list.
Same here. You inspired me to do a 5x5. Of the 5 games I picked, the only one that I actually managed to play 5 times was King Domino.
Okay, so what were the 5 games on your list?
I picked King Domino, Imhotep, Fire in the Library, Deep Sea Adventure, and Century Golem Edition. I figured all of these were ones that I really enjoy and I would like to play and that I thought I could get people to play with me. And while none of that was wrong, I kind of forgot that we review games. And so we cycle through lots of games very quickly. And for some reason, I literally only played Century Golem once the entire year.
Those kinds of things are just crazy to think about,
right? I don't know how that happened.
So, like I mentioned, I stupidly upgraded myself from a 5x5 to a 10x10. These are the 10 games that were on my list. Century Golem Edition, Debloccal, Dice Forge, Drop It, Fire Tower, Imhotep, Mole Rat in Space, Role Player, and Spell Smashers.
And I'm going to guess there's maybe one of those that you played 10 times?
There is one of those that I played 10 times, and that was Drop It.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Drop It is a classic for our Common Heart game night, and so it gets played a lot.
Sure.
And I played that exactly 10 times. The second on the list was Debloccal, because that was a 2-player game that plays very quickly. I have that at 7. Third was Century Golem. I have that at 5 plays. So that actually might make it onto this year's 5x5. We'll talk about what we're doing this year next. After that, I've got Role Player at 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
Imhotep and Fire Tower I have on here at 2 plays apiece.
Mm-hmm.
Dice Forge and Mole Rats in Space, 1 play apiece, and I did not play Spell Smashers at all this year. And that makes me sad because I really like that game.
It's a fun game.
It's a great game.
But it's one that requires quite a bit to kind of get it out and get people interested and set it up. And it takes a while.
Yep. And one of the things that was going to be big this year was moving into my own office. And so having a dedicated gaming space. And while we did do some gaming down here, it didn't really end up that way for lots of different reasons. So we weren't able to like set a game up and leave it set up.
Yeah.
I don't think that's something that we won't be able to do in the future. It just didn't really happen this year. So
it wasn't a big thing for us this year.
So out of my 10 by 10, which is 100 games, I have 31 games played.
Okay.
So I did not even get a third of the way through.
So I hit 67% of my 5x5. Interestingly enough, I'm looking at the stats for the games I did play this year. There were 34 games that I played at least 5 times, but only one of those was on my 5x5. And only a bare handful were games that I had played before 2019 started. So, perk slash problem with reviewing a lot of games?
Yeah, I don't know. So, we both failed at our X by X
goals. Oh, yeah.
Goals.
Big time.
I will definitely do a 5x5 this year. I have no idea what games are going to be on it.
I think you and I should collaborate at least a little bit if we're both doing 5x5s.
At least two of the games.
There's more overlap.
Be on both of them, right?
Yes.
Yes. I will absolutely do that. Do you want to talk about our board game tracking in general this year? Or do you want to move into another one of our failed resolutions?
let's balance out the failures and the successes.
Okay.
I resolved to continue tracking every play of every game.
Mm-hmm.
And for the most part, I'd say I succeeded. I really like the BG Stats app. It costs a couple bucks, but it's so much easier than tracking plays directly on the Board Game Geek website.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that.
Or a spreadsheet or anything like that.
I even think the extra couple of dollars for the deep stats is worth it.
Sure.
Because it's like $7 for everything. I started using BG Stats at the end of last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I figured it would be a way for me to kind of do some of the same thing and feel like a giant nerd. But that's okay. I'm embracing my giant nerdness.
I like being a nerd.
Yeah. And so here's some relevant stats for me in 2019. I had 348 plays of 186 different games.
Wow.
261 players, which is a lot. But again, hosting game nights, I play games with a lot of different people.
Yeah.
Of which 35 were named. So it's possible that some of those anonymouses were the same person.
Probably a bunch of them, yeah.
In fact, probably a lot of them were. But that was that. This was across 4 different locations. I tracked playing games at home, playing games at Common Heart Game Night, playing games at Dice Tower Con 2019, and also just the unknown location. And my H index is 6. You want to talk about what an H index is?
Sure. I have no idea who came up with this concept, but it's a good way of measuring how deep versus how broad is your game playing.
Mm-hmm.
Your H index is you've played this many games at least this many times. So if you say your H index is 6, that means that there were at least 6 games that you played 6 times this year.
Now, in reality, I'm looking at my stats, I have 8 games that I played at least 6 times. But because I don't have 7 games that I played 7 times, it still stays at 6.
Your H index still stays at 6.
When you look at the breadth and the depth, it's whichever number is lower is the one that it takes for your H index.
Yes. My H index is 9, but that's due in large part to games like Panic Island and Palm Island and Hex Roller, which are very short and very small, and you can play a lot of times quickly.
So taking a look a little bit more in depth for me, I dimed 3 games. That means I have 3 games that I played at least 10 times. Those are Draftosaurus, Drop It, and Tiny Towns.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I fived 7 games. So this is games that I have played at least 5 times. Those are Dice Throne, Century Golem, Similo, Get the MacGuffin, Cabo, Quax, and Deblockle. Now, your numbers are going to be a lot higher in general.
Yeah, well, especially those really short games. I play a lot of those, especially with the kids. And games that can be played solo, I will tend to play more.
Did you quarter anything?
I did not. The game I played the most this past year is Panic Island at 22 plays.
That's a lot of plays.
But each one is a minute long.
I know. So I think we discovered that I probably was not as careful with recording plays as you were.
Sure.
So I certainly missed stuff. Over the course of the year, it's reasonable to assume that I missed 17 plays, which means that I averaged more than a play a day, probably.
Sure.
It has 348 documented.
Sure.
But yeah, so that's my stats. I just find this interesting. Using BG stats, you can look at the people you played with the most, the days you played the most common player counts for the games that you played, obviously locations, which I mentioned before. It's really interesting to look into this. By the way, nobody will be surprised to hear that you take the top spot at 29% of the games that I've played with you.
Aww.
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully, you are still beating out our son Asher for the top spot.
Just
in my
barely.
Game list. It's so close, man.
Is it really?
It's so close.
That's funny. So that is BG Stats. I mentioned on our show last year that I would start using this and use it, obviously, for the 10x10. The 10x10 didn't work out. I am enjoying using the app.
It's really neat to be able to go back and look at how often you're playing things, when the last time was you played something. I mean, like I mentioned about Duple, it was a total surprise that it had been so long since we last played it.
Mm-hmm. So let's take a look at another one of our resolutions. We talked a little bit about our 5x5 Kallax. And about how it was kind of overfull and we needed to get it to the point where it wasn't overfull anymore. Well, it is no longer overfull.
Because we bought more shelves.
We did.
No, I mean, we did buy more shelves, but we were very intentional about culling down our collection this year and either getting rid of or putting into a more long-term storage a lot of games that just aren't getting played.
So our collection definitely did grow.
But not as much as it could have.
Not as much as it could have. We have four boxes of games that we're ready to move on from, except we're doing this whole Board Game Cafe thing, and so we kind of want to keep them around.
Yeah, it doesn't really make sense to get rid of them, but for our family, for the family gamers, we act now as if those games no longer exist.
So, epic failure on the 5x5 culling. In some ways, but I also think we made some difficult decisions.
We made some difficult decisions, and while we didn't really shrink our collection, we kept it from growing in an out-of-control way.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
And I definitely am becoming a little bit more dispassionate about the games in the collection in general, and I find myself looking at the shelves and being like, yeah, I mean, these are a series of games that I could see myself moving on from if we really had to make some painful downsizing decisions. And I don't think I could have done that emotionally last year.
Okay, that's fair.
So that is that. Our shelf of shame. Now, I don't think we had an actual count last year of what our shelf of shame looked like.
We certainly didn't mention it on the podcast. I believe we said it was two cubes.
Yes.
We counted the current shelf of shame.
Mm-hmm.
You and I both counted different games, apparently, but wound up with the same number. So we'll call that number good.
Yeah.
It is 22 games.
22 games.
That's
and
a lot.
Yes, it is. It's probably a little bit more than two cubes worth.
Yeah. Some are small, some are not so small.
Yeah, now that we have a little bit more cube space, it's not quite as jammed full, which is, you know, nice. But we have a little bit more, and a lot of that is because we just got 12 games from Unplugged that have no strings associated with them, so they've just kind of been languishing and waiting for us to get through the massive influx from the last convention.
Yes, definitely. Of those 22 games on our so-called shelf of shame, I think we figured out that about 7 of them were on the shelf of shame last year.
That's bad.
Which is really not great. Good.
So we're not doing great on that one.
Made some progress, but not a lot.
Right.
Sort of connected to that was we really wanted to get more on top of our review queue. It felt like we had too many games to review. So this is another sort of, we kind of succeeded, we kind of failed,
mm-hmm.
a little of both.
Yep. So here's the thing. We succeeded in the sense that we're very fortunate to be able to put out a lot of great content. Well, we think the content is great. We have some wonderful writers that are working with us.
Mm-hmm.
We've continued with the Snap reviews. We've been doing them for over a year now. We just released Snap review number 64.
Yeah, about a year and a half.
So we're doing a great job there, I think, getting content out to our listeners and to our readers. A side effect of that is that we're getting to know more publishers. More publishers are getting to know us. And
they
guess
want us
what
to
that
review
means?
Their games.
They are sending us their content for us to review.
Really what this looks like is it's not that we have fewer games in the review queue, but we're doing a much better job with turnaround time and feeling a lot better about not having stuff languishing there for way too long. So
Again, a mixed bag.
A qualified success.
I have one more thing on my list that we mentioned on the last show, and that was I was working on a game, and I had a bag of parts for said game.
That bag of parts is in the same place it was last year.
It is not in the same place because we reorganized my office.
Aha. Uh-huh. So but that's the one time it got moved this
but
year.
But it is exactly the same bag of components that it has been for a year. So that would be an unqualified failure on my part to continue to work on that. A large part of that is because it is a game that is rooted in history, and so there's research that goes along with it.
Might still be an issue.
But why look back? Let's look forward.
All right. So let's talk about plans and goals and resolutions for 2020.
Sure. So let's talk about conventions first.
Okay, so last year, at about this time, we told you all that we were going to go to Boston Fig and PAX U like we do every year.
Mm-hmm.
And we were also hoping and planning to go to Dice Tower Con and Origins and have Nick go to Gen Con again.
Yep, and we did all those
things.
And
we did all of those things.
We did them all. Hey! I even went to Total Con for a day.
Yeah. This year, what are we going to do the same? What are we going to do differently with conventions?
So this year, I'm going to go to Toy Fair. I went to Toy Fair
cool.
with Foxmind Games a few years ago, maybe 2015, I want to say. So it's been a long time since I've been there. Toy Fair is a really interesting convention because it's not open to the public. It's industry only. So it's a little bit more businessy, which I find really fascinating. I'm really intrigued by the business side of the fence. And so I'm really looking forward to doing that. So we're shooting for Toy Fair in February.
Okay, cool. We're still kind of on the fence about Granite Game Summit.
Yeah, it's just hard with the kids.
We need to figure it out really soon.
Granite Game Summit is just difficult with the kids. That's what it boils down to.
It's more of a scheduling thing than anything else.
I do not think we're going to be able to do Dice Tower Con again this year. It was a lot of fun to be able to do that, but cons are expensive.
Yeah, same with Origins. I would love to go back. It was a really fun time, and I had a great time rooming with and hanging out with the One Board Family crew. Mm-hmm. But it did overlap with the end of the school year, which was awkward. And with three kids in three separate schools, I don't really want to do that again.
To me, you mean?
Yes, to you.
So, yeah, probably not going to happen. However, Nick will be going back to Gen Con.
Yes.
So we'll get a lot of great stuff out of that. There might be something else. We don't have anything finalized yet, but there's some looming things that might happen on the West Coast.
Well, and as we've talked about and you've come to expect from us, we will definitely be going to Boston Fig.
Mm-hmm.
We will definitely be going to PAX Unplugged.
Mm-hmm.
Those feel like forever away right now, but they're going to happen and we're going to be there.
Yeah, we're absolutely looking forward to that. So those are our convention plans for 2020.
All right. Well, what else are we going to do? We mentioned that you and I are probably going to attempt 5x5s again. I know for myself, one thing I'm going to do is build up my 5x5 slowly and observe what I'm already enjoying playing and then try to add those kind of things on.
Oh, no, I'll have my 5x5 done by the end of the week.
And that's fine. But you're scaling back to a 5x5 and trying to be realistic about it. And I'm realizing that in January, I don't know what kind of games are going to be a hit with me throughout the course of the year. So,
I mean, okay, that's fair, I suppose. But probably we'll have it done this week. So that's going to be my biggest 2020 resolution, I think, is that.
Okay.
I suppose I also want the Common Heart Game Nights to continue throughout the year. I think that they've been slowly growing and we've been having some success with that. And I see no reason to stop it. So that'll be fun.
Yeah, this has been a little bit of a weird and a tough thing for me. But in the idea of starting a small business and trying to see if it's going to work out, you all get to kind of follow us at a distance. And we're trying to share where we're going without getting too far into the struggles and challenges
into the
it
weeds,
involves.
Basically, yeah. But I mean, that would be certainly something where if you have any questions about the whole process of starting a board game cafe, feel free to reach out. We'd be happy
to talk about it. I have a goal for 2020 that is a little hard for me to quantify right now, but I want to get our older children more outwardly involved in Family Gamers content.
Okay.
Elliot, our youngest, absolutely loves recording Snap Reviews with us, and he's certainly got the personality for it.
He certainly does.
But finding ways for Claire and Asher to express their own personalities and the things they want to be able to do while getting their face on the brand a little bit more.
In as much as they want to.
As much as they want to.
Right. Yeah. So we know that Claire likes to be behind the camera.
Yes.
And we've talked for a while about trying to figure out how to mix video into what we offer at the Family Gamers. And that may be something that we can certainly look into.
Yeah. So nothing concrete right now, but as a parent and as Family Gamers editor, I want to get them more involved. Okay, I've got one more. Last year we talked about shrinking the game collection and shrinking certain things in the Kallax. I'm not going to say that for this year. What I am going to say is I want to not add any more shelves, and I don't want to overflow the shelves we have.
I'm 100% on board with that.
That feel fair?
Absolutely.
All right. That feels like a goal we can do. I hope. Maybe.
I don't think it's going to happen this year, but in the next couple of years, I do want to actually build my gaming table.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen in 2020, though. Too many other things to do.
Yep, absolutely. But the thing is, it's the end of 2019 and the beginning of 2020 for everybody, not just for us. So we would love to hear what your board game-related resolutions were.
And did your resolutions for 2019 work out or not?
Yeah, and what are your resolutions for 2020? Did you look at what you did for 2019 and see success and to try to go, you know, the next level? Did you do a 5x5 in 2019 and now you're going to do a 10x10? Is it something you're going to bring your kids along for the ride on? What kinds of things are you doing board game related wrapped around this whole New Year's resolution thing?
Let us know by commenting on the post for this episode. Go to thefamilygamers.com and just look for episode 176 or talk to us on social media.
Yeah, there's lots of different ways you can get a hold of us on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at FamilyGamersAA. We are always listening.
Or you could share your thoughts about New Year's resolutions, board game ones, on our community, the Family Gamers community on Facebook. Easiest way to get there is go to thefamilygamers.com/community.
If you'd like to email us instead, you can always email us, Andrew@thefamilygamers.com.
Anitra@thefamilygamers.com.
I don't know if we can make a New Year's resolution for getting a certain number of new subscribers to the Family Gamers podcast, but we would certainly love it if you are not already subscribing to head over to iTunes or whatever your podcast subscription source is and hit that little subscribe button to subscribe to the Family Gamers podcast. Leave us a review, leave us a couple of stars, whatever it might be that you can add to it. Tell your friends about the show.
Tell your neighbors.
Yes. Tell your family. And tell everybody about the show.
Tell everyone.
Everybody.
Everyone.
Family Gamers Evangelist. One of the things about New Year's resolutions is that we always kind of try to look at something that maybe we're not doing as well as we could and vowing to be better about them. One of them is weight management, but another one is money.
And our sponsor, First Move Financial, will help you do just that.
Donnie Carpenter founded First Move Financial as a response to being told financial advisors cannot profitably serve average American families. So what he did was he figured out a fee structure that allows him to help advise families that might not be putting money in for investments yet. They're just trying to figure out how to spend their money wisely. He now gets the pleasure of working with clients that range from hundreds of thousands in student loan debt to living off retirement savings. Visit firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers to schedule a 15-minute phone call, and you can find out if First Move can help you make your next move.
Thanks again to First Move Financial for sponsoring the show.
So I think that's going to be it for us this week. So until next week, everyone,
play games with your kids.